Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
At our church, we have people repeat a prayer who want to place their faith in Christ.
Jesus did all the hard part. He did everything but pray your prayer.
I'm going to ask you just to pray with me right now. Just say these words with me.
You can say those words every day for the rest of your life and die and be separated from God.
The scripture does not say that Jesus Christ came to the nation of Israel and said that the time is fulfilled and the kingdom of God is at hand. Now, who would like to ask me into their hearts?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel. Tell me what's the word.
I was being sarcastic, which is another big word you'll learn in school.
What's the word on the street?
This is Wretched Radio. The word du jour, which is also the word of the day, sounds delicious. I think I'll have it, is natural law. Friel, that's two words. That's not the point. We could only find a jingle with the word word. The words of the day, natural law. I was reading a rather lengthy article in the American Spectator by a Roman Catholic historian, theologian, professor of law at the University of Notre Dame, explaining how the founding fathers understood natural law. And it was one of the most helpful treatises I've read on the subject to help me understand, okay, here's what they were thinking when it came to the subject of state-endorsed religion. After all, isn't that the debate of the day? The separation of church and state? What does that look like? What is the involvement of the state with the church? What sort of rules can they hang on the church's front door? And can the church get involved in government? Understanding natural law might bring a little bit of clarity, especially considering the headlines of the day, specifically out of Florida. Ron DeSantis, who recently, by the way, the legislation that went through, you can't have social media until you're 14. Whoa. Was reading Haidt, H-I-H-A-I-D-T. I believe John, psychologist at some whoop-de-doo school, wrote a book saying that kids should not have social media access until they're 16. And his battle cry was, we better stop this, because the mental health epidemic, it sure does appear that the string is directly connected to the smartphone. When it was launched in 2010, we started to see an increase in suicides, depression, anxiety of all sorts, and then suddenly gender confusion. And his contention is, we don't get a handle on this, we're in big trouble. But another piece of legislation from Ron DeSantis is there's going to be a school chaplaincy program in Florida. They're going to allow chaplains to go into the schools to help kids. I think that's a concession that should be screaming loudly and clearly, schools are in trouble. This is not to impugn the good work of so many Christian teachers. I'm talking about the kids that are coming to the schools. They are coming from broken homes, even when they're intact. They are being indoctrinated constantly by the social media. So for every one good message from mom and dad, they get 100 that contradict it on social media. And the kids are coming to school, and the teachers and those in authority are having difficulties keeping them under control and teaching them. By the way, that I hope it's John. Maybe you should just find it, Friel. That Haidt article, H-A-I-D-T, not H-A-T-E. He said that schools shouldn't be in classrooms, or schools shouldn't be in classrooms. Jimmy, have I been drinking again? That cell phones shouldn't be in classrooms, in schools. There's all the correct words strung together. Get them out, because they're going to be tempted. They're going to be distracted, and they're not there for Twitter. They're there to learn. Well, hopefully. Ron DeSantis saying we need chaplains in the schools. I believe a concession that the educators, they have no mechanisms for helping these kids. Their authority, it has been watered down. The parents are sending their kids off to school and they are not trained to be participating in group activities. They're belligerent. They reject authority. And the schools are struggling. And so the school chaplaincy program is House Bill 931, signed into law late last week, allowing school districts, charter schools to adopt a policy to authorize volunteer school chaplains to provide support services and programs to students as assigned by the district school board or charter school governing board. That's starting July 1st. Volunteer. Okay. I have to confess, while the concept seems nifty, what sort of chaplains are going to be in the schools reaching the kids, offering them supposed help? Because a chaplain could be gender affirming. A chaplain could be super liberal. A chaplain could be anti-Bible. And a chaplain could be a Satanist. And that's why Ron DeSantis said, hey, to everybody, don't panic. This isn't going to let the Satanists in. They're not going to get inside of this. They're not going to be, quote, running around in all our schools. We're not playing those games in Florida. Okay. I like that. Should be pretty obvious. Let's keep people who worship Satan out. But it's not obvious anymore. And so as I read Ron DeSantis's words, for which I'm grateful, I had to ask the question, wait a second, sir, if there's freedom of religion and the IRS has deemed that Satanism is a tax-exempt religious organization, then by what authority can Ron DeSantis say that religion has to stay out? Why can't a radical imam chaplain? By what authority can we say you got to stay out? So the Satanists, they heard about this, of course, and they are wanting a public debate. Quote, we believe a public debate would provide an excellent platform to thoroughly discuss the principles of religious freedom in America. And I suspect if that debate were to be had, I'm just imagining they would be able to argue that if you're going to do it for one, you got to do it for all. And that would be a very powerful case. And Ron DeSantis would have to say, no, we don't have to do it for all. But on what basis? Now, if Ron DeSantis wanted to quote the Bible, he could say, here's our authority, but the Bible currently isn't the governing document of the United States of America. That would be the Constitution, Declaration, etc. He could, however, consider natural law. Let me take you to that article from the American Spectator. Very helpful. The tenets of natural religion, true propositions about divine realities. See, here's you're gonna hear a lot of words that sound like common sense, but they're just recoined. Like natural religion, duh, you got a creation, there's a creator. True propositions about divine realities and the connections between those realities and humankind that can be known through the use of unaided reason. That's what they, according to this article, esteemed natural law to be. That if we just use our noggins a little bit, I know that's a problem. That's the point of this diatribe. If we just use our brains, some things are just obvious. Some things are naturally good. Some things are naturally bad. We, of course, would call it the conscience that bears witness. They know right from wrong. But there's also an intuitive sense of the divine. Furthermore, there would be an understanding that there is a good and there's an evil at play. Now, it's all underneath the providential sovereign reign of God, but that you've got God, the benevolent creator, and you've got a force that is evil. We call him Satan and his minions. We used to get that. And so the founding fathers said, well, that's natural religion. Duh. Now, you can... It doesn't say that that's the God of the Bible. It just says we have to come to the conclusion that there is a divine being, because it's common sense or natural religion or natural law. And so they saw natural religion as more of a philosophy. You can ascribe whatever deity you want to these common sense conclusions, but you can't deny them. This is from the article, they are no more mysterious or dreamy or impractical and no less metaphysical than our nation's founding beliefs in human equality or inalienable rights. In other words, the founding fathers thought, well, this is just an obvious thing, that natural religion should be allowed and taken into consideration. And that is where I think is about the only corner of refuge for Ron DeSantis making this case. Because if we simply go by the straight logic, if you will, of if you allow it for one religion, you have to allow it for all, without in quoting the Bible, he has no authority. And he can't just get away with, well, hey, we're not playing those games here. And he could cite natural religion. But alas, or a lad, if you want to be gender specific, there could even be problems with that. Next on Wretched Radio.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to Wretched Radio today. And I know we've been talking quite a bit about history today. And if that's an area that interests you, then you may want to take note of our upcoming ministry overhaul. Later this year, we are forming a Christian version of the Daily Wire. That's happening in September. 8 new voices will be joining this ministry. Men like Dr. John Kratz and Dr. Andrew Walker, who will be producing content and podcasts that range from theology to church history. But we need your help in order to make this happen. Currently, right now, we have a $250,000 match campaign ongoing. For every dollar you're able to give to this new ministry overhaul, it will be doubled. You can find all of the information right now by visiting wretched.org/fellows. That's wretched.org/fellows. And together, we're going to be able to respond to all of the insanity that we see in this brave new world we're living in. Wretched.org/fellows. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Who will speak for those who are staggering to the slaughter? Seems like right now would be a good time to encourage you to support Preborn Ministries. They're in it. It's a little complex out there with the internet and ordering pills. They're in the game. They're working hard to save babies and save mommies and daddies with the gospel. So if you are energized about life, that's something you can do. You can support Preborn. They provide free ultrasounds despite the accusations of all pro-life clinics. They are holistic. They do care about the mommy too. And they care for the family and they provide training. And it is literally a way that if you have the means, you can be saving a life. Amazing ministry. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Okay, so imagine that you're inside of a maze, and every corner that you take, there's another wall, there's another obstacle, and you finally get to the point of frustration where you think you're never going to get out. But then imagine a different scenario. You're still inside that maze, but every corner you take is a guide who has a flashlight and is saying, nope, that's the right way to go. And in that scenario, we welcome you to Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford. And whether you've listened or not, you'll realize really quickly it's not your everyday radio show. Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford takes issues that many, if not all of us, struggle with, and it matches them up to hope and healing through the pages of the Bible. It is genuinely an entirely new perspective. New episodes drop every Saturday morning in your favorite podcast spot or at transformed.org/podcast. Transformed with Dr. Greg Gifford.
Books of the Bible. Because God's people disobeyed, he sent them into exile. The book of Ezra tells us of Israel's return under Ezra's leadership and preaching, and how Israel underwent a period of intense reformation.
When you experience divine chastisement, look to Ezra to see that God's discipline is meant for your restoration and reformation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Jimmy loves Joe Biden. Jimmy loves Joe Biden. This is Wretched Radio. What I just heard during the break, I didn't know. Apparently, we've got a progressive in Christian clothing. You don't like the Ron DeSantis, no Satanist chaplains, huh?
I love his heart on it, and I appreciate what he's trying and attempting to do.
Bringing chaplains into the schools.
Right. The problem is, you talked about the Satanists and keeping them out. He might even be able to keep them out now.
But another governor comes in.
He's not going to be the governor forever.
And so you want Joe Biden to be the president.
No, I saw a sign over the weekend. I identify as non-Bidenary.
Yeah. How long have you been waiting to use that?
How
long?
Just today. I just saw it this weekend.
And you're going to accompany that with a dad joke?
No, not right now.
Oh, we're going to sneak that in a little bit later. Then, by the way, what I just did to Jimmy is what I see happening all the time in Christian dialogue. Hey, I disagree with this particular aspect of the program. Therefore, you're totally on the other side. We offer no quarter to you. You disagree on anything, and you're out of here, pally boy. That doesn't help the conversation much now, does it? Ron DeSantis, he wants chaplains in the schools, but not bad ones. But the question is, how do you determine what's a bad one and what's a good one? Who gets to say? I might sneak in a snarky remark saying that's the problem with Christian nationalism. But that is the problem with Christian nationalism. Whose Christianity is going to be taught in the schools? What prayers are going to be offered? Who is going to win this? By the way, we're seeing this in India. It is almost certain that the prime minister is going to be elected to a third term. And he is a Hindu nationalist. They're even calling it that, Hindu nationalism. And there's 200 Muslims in India, and they're feeling it. So are the Christians, because it is a prideful promotion of Hinduism returning to their non-colonialized roots. And we're seeing a great deal of oppression. Well, I'm not suggesting that Christianity is at all like Hinduism, but whose version of Christianity is going to be imposed? What if it's a really bad Christian? What if Robert Shuler's great-grandson becomes the president and we all have to believe in the power of positive thinking Christianity? Well, what if, I don't know, Stephen Furtick becomes the president? Are we all going to have to take steroids and bulk up at the gym? I'm just asking some questions here. What that actually looks like. Let me take you to the American Spectator. I thought a helpful treatise on the subject of natural law, natural religion. I think really the words common sense are the foundation of this entire treatment of the subject. But this particular law professor, his name is Gerard Bradley from Notre Dame, helps us understand how the founding fathers perhaps thought about natural religion and natural law. Here's what he wrote. The founders did not forsake secular lawmaking purposes when they affirmed natural truths about divine things. They held that there was a divine intention with making secular laws. They didn't see the absolute necessity of the government running away from anything that might have a cross on it, or a Jewish star for that matter, because they simply saw people who believed in the divine, whatever they chose, more philosophically. It's just a way of living, concluded by the obvious that if you've got a creation, you've got a creator. In fact, they didn't use the term secular when they discussed religion and the polity. They knew there was this world, time and space, and there was a subsequent, very different world of final universal justice. That's the stuff that the Bible says eternity is written on our hearts. We know that. And our conscience tells us, hey, I've done bad things and I should be punished for that. Oh, is that what's beyond the door? That was just assumed. That was just a generally accepted, I'll call it, philosophy, to use the founder's feelings. Death marked a passage between the two, but that did not establish a hard boundary in either thought or action between the secular and the religious. I wonder if this is why we've had so many debates that end up at dead ends on the subject of church and state, because perhaps, maybe, we've misunderstood what the founding fathers believed about religion, at least natural religion. Quote, the founding fathers firmly believed that governmental care for religion, including public witness to the existence of a creator God who providentially guides human affairs, was part of the temporal common good. If the founders were pressed further to articulate what that looks like, they would have likely said religion is a distinct part of the human experience, and that public authority has a limited but still important duty to foster religion. There was nothing really secular about that. Now, here's the problem. Founding fathers lived at a time where the predominant religion was Christianity. They were not living in the pluralistic society that we live in today. And so we see as a nation that doesn't, they're not like-minded in these issues. And there are those who deny natural religion. We call them atheists, we call them nuns. How can we bring this to bear in these civic debates that we're having about the government and the tender relationship with anything religious? And I think the answer at this moment is, I don't think we can. I don't think that we can. Because what undergirds natural religion has been put on the altar of postmodernism, of progressivism, of atheism, and it long ago died. And there is no truth. There is no logic and reason. The second reason to understand natural religion in the founders' worldview is that it enables us to appreciate the distinction they drew between it and the peculiarities of different sects. Before and after 1776, anyone could see many churches and religious groups were distinguished one from the other mainly by what we added to natural religion. In other words, denominational, I'll call them peculiarities, distinctives, that's better. They got that. Oh, it's okay. You can do. We're not interested in that. We're just interested in natural religion. So if you're doing good things, the government is for you. Keep going. That can't happen today. We have more than Christian religions. They did not have Islamic mosques. They did not have Hindu temples. They didn't have competing religions that year. Therefore, one could, and the founders did, contrast natural religion with revealed and positive religion. Fascinating. The founders wisely judged that their polity could flourish without enforced unanimity about or a top-down settlement of these questions. So the common good, for example, didn't require the government show favor to a particular form of liturgy, nor any sort of creed. Theologians, they can deal with that, but the lawmaker adhered to just the concept that there is a religious good because a divine exists. The truth or falsity of these matters of denominational distinctions, even recognizing the kinds of things that could be true or false, was beyond the scope of public authority. That, writes this author, was the original understanding of the Establishment Clause. This, the law knows no heresy, and it is committed to the support of no dogma, the establishment of no sect. But that doesn't mean that they were opposed to natural religion. And I just can't help but think that's where the conversation breaks down these days. Now, you do with that as you see fit. But now we have to ask ourselves the question, if we can't do something that seems good, have chaplains into schools, because we can't discriminate against good religion and bad religion, true religion and false religion, what can we do? What's left for us to possibly commit to in order to affect change and for people to hear the truth? And I think the answer just keeps coming back to Matthew chapter 28. If you don't want bad chaplains, then let's make Christians. You don't want Satanists in schools, then let's share the gospel so that they get saved. If we don't want progressivism to rule the day, then we need more people who have better thinking because they have been regenerated. Well, I found this presentation of natural religion rather interesting and perhaps illuminating when it comes to the understanding of the Founding Fathers regarding the Establishment Clause. I'm afraid I came back to the same old, same old. Our job in this era and every era is to make disciples. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for a Wretched News break here on Wretched Radio. I am Jimmy Hicks. Well, we start with Communist China, who is rapidly expanding its presence in the Caribbean, just a couple hundred miles from the U.S. Virgin Islands. On the island of Antigua, China is constructing a special economic zone that will have its own customs, immigration, shipping port, airline, and even the possibility to issue passports. U.S. officials are rightly alarmed as China has a history of using such developments to sneak their military into new regions under the guise of commerce and diplomacy. And despite local officials in Antigua downplaying the threat, experts in the region warn that Antigua has essentially traded its sovereignty and become overly reliant on China. In other news, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a law to stop the absurd abuse of book challenge policies by activist teachers. Certain educators were trying to get classic books banned as some sort of political stunt, and DeSantis said he wasn't having any of it, saying, "We don't care about your performative efforts to try to make a name for yourself. That's not appropriate." Even mentioning one teacher who passive-aggressively covered up every book, blaming the state. DeSantis said, quote, "That's nonsense, and we're just not going to tolerate it." And media news, Republicans are pushing to defund NPR over their blatant liberal bias exposed by a former editor. Congresswoman Claudia Tenney introduced the Defund NPR Act, stating the obvious, that NPR has become a partisan propaganda machine, and it's past time American people stop footing the bill for it. I can get behind that one. Look, I completely am for them saying whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want. It's free speech, right? But Americans shouldn't be paying for it. And the Biden administration's priorities, well, they continue to surprise. Just when you thought it can't get any crazier, Biden says, watch this. They plan to spend over $2 million in taxpayer funds to, quote, diversify marine biology and climate science. Apparently, fish and weather are racist now. The goal, they say, is to develop equity-driven anti-racist programs in those fields. Well, you can't expect too much from the same administration that gave the final blow to women's rights. The Biden administration essentially abolished Title IX with its radical redefinition to include gender identity. Former collegiate swimmer Riley Gaines has been on the front lines fighting this for quite a while, and she commented on this one, saying that this will have devastating consequences. That you will see men who take women's scholarships, have full locker room access, and even bunk with women in their dorms. Students and faculty will be forced to use preferred pronouns or face harassment charges. Completely unbelievable. And I get sometimes we just get so tired of the nonsense that we don't even want to participate in politics. Elections certainly have consequences. And that's been today's Wretched News Break. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Bread of Life. Just as God gave life to his people in the desert by providing manna, so Jesus gives life to his people through his body broken on the cross, which we remember in the breaking of the bread in communion. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
No. No, I wasn't. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, what was your conclusion from the diatribe on natural religion as understood by the founding fathers?
Well, I just said that I had heard, or what I was getting from it was that maybe where the conversation today breaks down is we are imposing onto the founding fathers, because they were predominantly Christians, and this was, and that was the predominant religion of the day, that we're imposing those values or beliefs onto what they were intending with what they were doing.
Yeah, well, no, that's not what I was attempting to do.
Okay.
I wasn't trying to build any case other than to share what at least one historian believes was the understanding of the founding fathers regarding religion. They saw natural religion as the generally accepted premises that we observe and conclude by using logic and reason. So they would put it into the camp of philosophy. Denominations, theologians, have at it. Go ahead with your squabbles over Lord's Supper, baptism, church polity. Knock yourselves out. That is not the concern of the government. That's up to theologians to hash out. But the government did believe that it was good to foster a belief in religion. And predominantly then it was Christian. But I think, and please note, anything I say on this subject, it is certainly open to scrutiny. Going back to figure out the worldview of people long dead, it's a little bit of a challenge in a complicated issue like national government. Nevertheless, these fellows saw that for this type of government to work, there needs to be natural religion, a general understanding. We're accountable to someone. We'll call it nature's God. They wouldn't call it Jesus Christ. They wouldn't call it the Trinitarian God. They would call it nature's God. And as long as we agree that that God is going to hold us accountable for good that we pretty much sense is like this, then we're going to be judged. There's going to be justice for bad stuff that we pretty much agree is that. Then we'll promote that. But they weren't seeking, it seems, to promote denominationalism. They were seeking to promote a general good and a recognition that a society like this simply cannot work without God. It just can't. And aren't we seeing that these days? That God has been displaced, and look at the anarchy that follows. Oh, yeah. Duh. I hate it when my ADHD gets ADHD. I was going to share the article that I found about the cell phones killing the kids, but was reading another article about how postmodernism and the concept of postmodernism was just a ruse. You know, it was a book that was written 20 years ago, and I think I can find it here someplace. That was written 20 years ago that basically laid out the case. They aren't really arguing for a lack of truth. They have a defined set of beliefs. And it is contrary. They are absolutists when it comes to their morality, but it's in stark contradistinction to Christian absolutism. And he predicted that 20 years ago, and that's what we're seeing today. That's the battle. That we are seeing that postmodernism is merely the mechanism to undermine those values and replace them with godless ideologies. But that isn't the article. And by the way, if I could, please note, if you heard something that was agenda-driven in the presentation on natural religion, it wasn't. I don't have a... Well, I was going to say dog in that fight, but I think that's a terrible slogan. Dog fighting is awful. What a terrible thing. The people who do that, it's like, really? You want to train dogs to be nasty and then stand around and watch them? Honestly, how barbaric is that? How cell phones are killing our kids and what we can do about it. Found the article. Social psychologist Jonathan Haidt. Who is he? He's the professor of ethical leadership at Leonard and Stern School of Business at New York University. He's got a book called The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. And he makes it clear, no social media until they turn 16. Because he's seen, to me, I know you could argue, and this is always the debate on talk shows, isn't it? You bring in an expert who says, we've got the report and the study. No, actually, that study is flawed, because how else do you explain the radical change in children met around 2010? Well, let's see. Barack Obama was president. I guess we could blame him. Let's see. They stopped making episodes of Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, that could be it, I guess, but maybe. And I don't know if that's the year they stopped making Sherlock Holmes. Although we did watch a movie about, it was called Mr. Holmes. We caught it. It was about Sherlock Holmes at the end of his life. Again, fiction. When he was losing his faculties, he couldn't remember. And he was on a quest to try to recall his last case that drove him into retirement. We didn't have to fast forward once. Hey, there's something unique on TV these days. On TV, you tend to get people who undermine one study. No, we promote a study, and then we all end up going, I don't know what we're supposed to think. Well, how else are we supposed to attribute the mental health malaise that we are seeing in our kids these days that started in 2010 if it is not the internet, specifically the smartphone? And this fellow, he's making that clear. We're at a tipping point as a society. And if grown-ups, this is his words, and if grown-ups don't take action, they could risk the mental health of all young people indefinitely. Whoa. Kids used to have play-based childhoods. He observes that we've moved away from that because it wasn't safe to send the kids outside to play. And I think to a degree, obviously, that is true. And every parent needs to keep those precautions in mind. But what did we do? We said, well, we'll give them technology because, after all, that's the smart person's thing. And so we put them in front of technology and they started watching it for hours and they abandon play-based activities. If you're probably over 40, maybe 50, you remember this. Go outside and play. I got nothing to do. Figure it out. Now go. And out you went. And you played. And we determined that wasn't safe. Bring the kids inside and put them in front of violent videos. Apparently, we determined that was safe. We've overprotected our children in the real world, and we've underprotected them in the online world. In the early 2010s, it used to be that self-harm was not a thing 12 and 13-year-olds were doing. Older girls did that, but in the 2010s, hospital emergency room visits for self-harm from 10 to 14-year-olds tripled. Why? So here are the rules that he suggests. Number one, no smartphones before high school. You can make that call, mom and dad. But I think the evidence is in. We better do something to limit their exposure. We must clear them out of middle school and elementary school. Let kids have a flip phone or phone watch when they become independent, but no access to the internet. Two, no social media until 16 because they weren't made for children. Platforms are made for more sophisticated, and I don't mean necessarily in a good way, but more sophisticated communication, images, worldviews, activities. Number three, phone-free schools. It was Ireland, I believe. There was a district in Ireland that said, as the parents got together and said, we're done. The kids are doing so poorly in school, and the teachers were having a miserable time trying to control the kids. So they decided, no cell phones. I get it. What about the school shooters? What about the... I agree. We should consider how we keep our kids safe. Of course we should do that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that a child should have social media sitting in their pocket distracting them during classroom hours. Number four, more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world. We need to roll back the phone-based childhood and restore the play-based childhood. Here's an interesting note from this psychologist. Kids are somewhat sex segregated online. They tend to interact with their own gender. The situation is unconducive to heterosexual dating and marriage. How fascinating is this? I think the separation between boys and girls and their rising rates of anxiety are going to drive rates of marriage and heterosexual childbearing down faster than they've been going. And they've been going down for decades. Uh-oh. Are our cell phones grooming our children? What should you do, Mom and Dad? I have to confess, I don't have the magic solution. But do something. You must. This is Wretched Radio. If you're familiar with the Tomorrow Club's outstanding ministry, oh, what a testimony. Eastern Europe, Africa, poor, poor, poor places. The Tomorrow Clubs go in. They assemble the kids every week, preach the gospel, have them memorize the Bible, sing songs, love on them, give them some treats. It has been an outstanding ministry for over 20 years, and it's growing like a nobody's business, and it is a testimony to their faithfulness that over 50% of the Tomorrow Club volunteer leaders were Tomorrow Club kid attendees. Now, they, in their villages, are teaching the kids the gospel as volunteers for the Tomorrow Clubs. I got to tell you, that is a testimony. If you love supporting evangelistic ministries that are faithful, that actually preach repentance and faith, it's an outstanding ministry. If you can support it, would commend them to you by visiting tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Attention Christians, are you tired of the world telling you to shut up? Well, we figured you were because we are too, and our response is not to shut up, but to speak up even louder. That's right, we are launching our biggest and boldest initiative ever, the Gospel Partners Media Fellows Program. It's our very own Christian version of the Daily Wire. 8 straight shooting, theologically sound voices will be joining this ministry to create powerful podcasts, videos, resources, books, and webinars. And these men include people like Pastor Tim Challies, Dr. Jason Lyle, Pastor Brad Bigney, Dr. John Krotz, and others. We are building a Christian Daily Wire, and we need your help in order to do it. Join our $250,000 match campaign by becoming a gospel partner today. All of the details you can find right now at wretched.org/fellows, and we can make a difference together. wretched.org/fellows.
I'm so excited about this. That's right. I'm actually giddy about Bibles. We are going to be doing another campaign with our good friends at the Masters Academy International. We're going to be sending MacArthur Study Bibles to places that, for various reasons, our brothers and sisters don't have study Bibles. And we did a campaign to the Philippines. 10,000 Bibles were sent to our brothers and sisters in the Philippines. I think we're either going to do another 10 or 15,000 to countries whose names we better not speak. So be on the lookout for it. And if you'd like to start even supporting that now, that would rock. You can learn more about the amazing Masters Academy International. Don't forget, they've got the mini seminaries around the globe training indigenous pastors to rightly divide the word of truth. Telling you, first-class ministry with generational impact. You can learn more at wretched.org/Bible.
Names of God. Is Jesus God? One name given to God in Scripture is El Gibor, the Mighty God. One occurrence of this name stands out. In Isaiah chapter 9, El Gibor is the name given to the promised Messiah. Jesus is that promised Messiah. He is God incarnate. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Just in the nick of time, this is Wretched Radio. If you're taking notes and you want to know the title of the book written 20 years ago, it's The New Absolutes, and it revealed that the whole postmodern, post-truth, tolerant, what's good for you is good for me, just, you know, let's just let each other live, total farce. stating societal skirmishes being fought in the political and moral domains were not between moral relativists and moral absolutists, but rather between two absolutist camps. In other words, postmoderns, and we're seeing this, hey, we just want to be able to visit our loved ones in the hospital. Hey, we just want acceptance. Hey, we just want marriage. Hey, we want affirmation. Hey, you better do this or you're going to be canceled. What happened? It was progressively, no pun intended, progressively revealed that postmoderns had absolute morality, all anti-biblical, but they didn't come to play. It was merely a vehicle to drive us all off the cliff. The person who wrote the book, Pastor William Watkins, he chronicled 10 or so examples of the differences between the two warring factions. The foundational distinction between them was that the traditional absolutists had, for the most part, a Christian underpinning, while the new absolutists rejected God. The former had a transcendent, immutable groundwork, and the latter, arbitrary, humanistic, ever-evolving, but absolute. They knew what they wanted. Even though it kicked God to the curb, this, by the way, is from Robin Shoemaker, even though it kicked God to the curb, the new absolutism had rejected the typical atheist conclusions reached by Enlightenment thinkers. So Enlightenment thinkers, we might be going full circle here, asserted that a statement could be empirically verified. And if it can't, it should be discarded. Even atheists used to get that. Think natural religion, natural, call it common sense if you like. But if we couldn't substantiate a claim, then you toss the claim away. The new atheists, they do not believe that. They are not Enlightenment atheists. They are absolutist atheists. They don't want any sort of moral objectivity involved, including ethical declarations. Without God, all things are permitted, stated Dostoevsky. And that's exactly where they've been going. In 1881, William Graham received a letter from Charles Darwin, who thought about the matter of ethics without God. And he wrote this. This is Darwin. "With me, the horrid doubt always arises whether the conviction of man's mind, which has been developed from the mind of the lower animals, are of any value or at all trustworthy. Would anyone trust in the convictions of a monkey's mind? If there even are any convictions in such a mind? In other words, if we're just monkeys, there's no morality. There's no values. There's nothing transcendent." And even Darwin got that. And he was concerned about where the idea of a lack of any sort of transcendent deity would have on culture. And that's exactly what we are seeing today, isn't it? That the absolutist rules that were always in the mind of progressives are now in full color display. Headline number one to substantiate that: Planned Parenthood executed abortions were fourth leading cause of death in the United States. Isn't that lovely? The fourth leading cause of death. In the meantime, our president, denying reality, guts Title IX, from not the B. Well, that, of course, allows men to compete in women's sports. But furthermore, his new push gives schools power to punish kids for not using preferred pronouns. And he's claiming to be a Roman Catholic, and he is detached from natural religion. His mind is darkened. This is Riley Gaines. You know, I simultaneously appreciate Riley Gaines. On the other hand, she causes me to bristle, not because of her person or personality, but because we seem to have a woman leading the charge to defend women, and that ought not to be. It should be men stepping up and saying, no, I saw a picture. Again, I cheer for it. It was some high school girls, about 7, 8 girls, standing on the sidelines of the track, of the running track, while a dude who thought he was a lady is sprinting around the thing, and they just wouldn't participate. And they were cheered, and I went, yeah, no, that's brave, that's good. But they shouldn't have to be fighting those battles. Sorry, I know that sounds, you know, sexist and all. But where are the men stepping up to say, no, we are not going to let you do this? I don't think women should have to be fighting these battles. Having said that, I appreciate Riley Gaines. She stated that the Biden administration has just officially abolished Title IX as we know it. Here's what this means. Men can take academic and athletic scholarships from women. Okay, so here's something the fellas could do. This is actually Mrs. Friel's idea, because we saw a video, I think it was over the weekend, we saw a video. There was a race, and there was a boy in the girls' track, and he was ahead by like 100 yards. It was ridiculous that these girls were just being left in the dirt. And I thought, you know what? Here's something the guys could do. The boys' track stars could say that they identify as a girl, and they all run in the girls' race, and then they leave this average dude in the dust. Because he was average for boys. He wasn't a standout, but now he is when he runs against the girls. What if all the boys just invaded and went, there you go. Now you're not going to win. Are you sure that you want to identify as a girl, dude? Men will have full access to bathrooms and locker rooms. Absolute insanity. Men can be housed in dorm rooms with women. Isn't that nice? That your freshman daughter gets assigned a freshman girl roommate who has a shaving kit, and it's not for his legs. This is our federal government. Students and faculty must compel their speech by requiring the use of preferred pronouns. Preferred pronouns. When I hear that, I always think about Jordan Peterson. You know, that was his claim to fame up in Canada when he was a professor, psych prof in Toronto. They were mandating you got to use these pronouns. And he said, look, I might use somebody's pronoun if I make that decision, but you cannot compel me to use words I don't agree with. And even if I do, you still can't compel me to speak those words. That's what catapulted him to fame. If you get a chance, Babylon Bee did an interview with Jordan Peterson. It's 20 minutes long and it's funny. I couldn't tell if Jordan Peterson was in on the gag, but he sure did play with it. The guy was just an utter knucklehead in the interview, to the point where it was actually quite entertaining. If the guidelines above are ignored, these are the Biden Title IX guidelines, or even questioned, you can be charged with harassment. You remember the name Betsy DeVos? She was the former education secretary under Donald Trump. She worked on Title IX rules. She's responding now to Joe Biden's rewriting of these rules. Quote, the Biden administration's radical rewrite of Title IX guts the half century of protections and opportunities for women and callously replaces them with radical gender theory. The regulation is an assault on women and girls. It makes it a federal requirement that boys be allowed in girls' bathrooms in elementary schools. What could possibly go wrong? You gotta let people be free to be me, or they and them, if they prefer those pronouns instead. It makes it a federal requirement that men be allowed to play in women's sports. So much for privacy. So much for women competing against women and bearing the fruit of their hard work just getting stolen. And it makes it a federal requirement that feelings, not facts, dictate how Title IX is enforced. And that brings us back full circle. We used to live in an era where we understood feelings are not authoritative. Even the atheist can conclude some natural logic and reason dictates this is the way things are. You can, if you choose to, you can argue against the source, but deny the source and say that there is no nature's God, there's no right and wrong, there's no morality, there's no values, is just nuts. And it has no part in this culture. But we've accepted that and embraced that now. And postmodernism is the Elvis of our society. Elvis, who ushered in raunchy rock and roll. Postmodernism is the vehicle that was driven to bring us all to the brink of utter insanity. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.